Welcome to the Hospitality Podcast.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Come on, man.
I just need a...
This is the lamb
sauce. Where's the lamb sauce?
Presented by Arthur Gomez.
God damn, I just spent $8,000 on some f***ing wine.
And Quentin Wind.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
So pour yourself a glass, because we're diving into the world of restaurants, kitchen, and bar. The Hospitality Podcast.
Welcome everybody to Breaking the Cork. Today, a new episode with a special guest. We have with us a famous head chef. Quentin, maybe you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, absolutely. He is the head chef of a famous 2-Michelin-star restaurant opened by Anne-Sophie Pique, and he's got a bag of experience. He's going to tell everything about it and his journey from Peru to London, going through a cruise ship, and also losing his passport. His name is Evan Lopez.
First of all, thank you, Arthur. Thank you, Quentin, for inviting. Pleasure to meet you all.
Yeah.
As we'll start, if you want to introduce yourself,
right.
Also your position, how long you've been working with Dame de Pique, and also a bit about your past as well.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about yourself.
So yeah, my name is Evans, originally from Peru, Peruvian. Also, right now head chef of Dame de Pique in London, two Michelin star, and it's been an amazing time, 2 years.
For me, what intrigued me the most when I learned that you were from Peru is how did you adapt from Peruvian food to, I guess, French food? It must be so hard to just change. It's like learning a new language. It's like learning a completely new kitchen.
I studied culinary at university in Lima, Peru, back in the time, 2009 or 10. Then I left. I moved to the States. I moved to Florida for an internship. I work at the Hyatt. It's a hotel right there. I had an amazing time, about a year and a half. Then I realized that was not really my vibe over there. So I moved back to Peru, and I decided to know a bit of Europe. So the closest thing to me back in the time was the cruise ship. So I went to Costa Cruise Ship, which is, you know, it's a luxury.
It's a big one. Yeah,
exactly. And of course, very excited. I was very young, was about 19 years old. So, you know.
Oh, wow. So it was one of the first experiences.
Exactly. Yeah. Just after Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I just found this massive banqueting kitchens, a lot of chaos, many, many chefs. Like you cannot count how many chefs are in this kitchen.
Okay.
So then I spent about 2 years there.
So before you move to the next one, actually, can you tell me how was your day on the cruise ship? Can you explain a little bit about...
Right. You know? First of all, you worked 7 out of 7. Wow. So it's like, exactly.
No days off.
Wow. Days off. No, no, no.
For how long?
I was there. So you do contracts about 8 months, 7 months, 8 months. Exactly. It's very rough. Yeah. You're young, so you have a lot of energy, right? So you really don't care about days off and all of this.
Yeah.
So yeah, you spend a good time over there, then soon realize that it's not really what I wanted because it was just really massive production. Like you were cooking for 3,000 guests, 5,000 guests, depending. So it's a big quantity. So I tried to really get out of there and probably see a bit more. So then I wanted to learn about Italian cuisine. Mm-hmm. So I took a flight to Milan and actually landed in Milan 2014, if I'm not wrong. I work for this big chef. Well, he has a bistro back in the time called Pisacco. And it was a chill Italian cuisine. The head chef was Fabio Gambirasi.
Fine dining a bit?
Actually, because he used to be the sous chef of Andrea Berton, 2 Michelin star in Milan. So we're there for a few. I learned the basic, learned Italian as well.
Nice.
So had no choice. Then after that, I stayed in Milan for another year and a half. And I moved to Trussard della Scala, which was a 1 Michelin star back in the time. The head chef was Roberto Conti, big personality as well as a chef, very young, an amazing team. So I stayed there for a few as well, and then it was 2.5 years, almost 3, that I was already in Italy. So I was like, okay, it's time for me to move. So I took the first train, moved to Paris with no job, just contact a friend. The friend was waiting for me at the train station, just to get there, and then somehow I started looking for jobs. The funny thing is that it was very hard to find a job in Paris back in the time.
Because of the language?
Because of the language,
okay.
Exactly, because I was sending CVs through email just in English, and then I tried to just apply for, of course, I was looking for a Michelin experience after Milan, but I had no answers, like zero answers.
Really?
Not even one email back saying, oh, come for a trial, nothing.
Wow.
So I had no other choice to say, okay, I'm going to go in person. So one of the restaurants that I went, and actually a big idol for me back in the day, was Gianni Caleno, Le Doyen. they just got a third star. And so I went, and I remember it was, I just went through the main door, and then just say to the, was a girl in the desk, in the front desk, and I just said, can you please drop this to the chef? And when I look to my left, Jenny Kaleno was just right there.
Oh, really?
He was just right there next to me. And I, of course, in English, it was a pleasure to meet you. I was really, I was a young boy, no experience. Just, I said, look, if you're looking for a chef, please give me a shout. He immediately put me in contact with Sandrine, which was the HR in Aleno. And she said, you want to come for a trial tomorrow? And I'm like, of course. And then came for a trial. I remember my first day of trial, I was just picking rockets and just helping to clean some ducts on the kitchen on the bottom floor.
So it was like more like a commit job? Or?
Yeah, exactly. And then I didn't understand anything when they were saying to me in French. Like anything. I was just helping and trying to be very useful because you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, after I realized, I remember, okay, if you start tomorrow. Didn't know how much salary I was going to earn. Was just down for it. So
take the job and see where it takes you.
I feel like that's the thing with chef is, oh, okay, you want to go? Okay, you do the trial. They say yes, but they don't give you like much information. Like a normal job, they give you salary, they give you number of holidays.
Yeah,
it's just come back tomorrow and maybe you're going to get paid. Which is, I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because hospitality in general, I think, is a bit like that. So yeah. I can't recount how many jobs where I just, I accepted it without knowing how much I was going to get paid, really.
Yeah, the contractor.
Especially like back in the days, you were scared to ask, whereas now...
I think the industry has changed massively, right? Yeah. Because we're talking about 2015. It's really different. So yeah, I really didn't exactly knew how I work, how many holidays do I have, or how many hours I'm going to work, nothing. Just for me, honestly, it was already a big achievement to be there and be part of the team. And I remember Chef Jadi Kaleno, he approached me and he was very direct. And he said, you have to learn French. If you want to succeed in the kitchen, you have to learn French. There is no other way. Because he speaks actually good English, and he was very kind to explain. So yeah, that's how everything started. And actually, I'm not going to lie, I think Gianni Caleno, Pabion Ledoyen back in that time, it's one of the experiences that really shape as the person I am right now.
Yeah.
Really tough kitchen.
Okay.
I cannot give my detail otherwise. I think I'm allowed to. I'm just joking. No, but it was a really big experience for me. Actually, if I realize right now, and after 2 years that I was there, I was actually running midsection.
Okay.
And I end up as a chef de partie.
Yeah. So he did take care of you.
Yeah. Big time. For me, Gianni Kaleno is one of my biggest mentors. Starting.
You just mentioned that he had a very tough kitchen. Does your kitchen today reflect a little bit of?
Very different. Okay. I wouldn't actually compare. Okay. But of course, the base chef always they are there.
Yeah.
If I can give an example, back in the time, even all the chefs that were with me in the kitchen 2015, they all are right now I would consider big chefs. For example, Domenico Candela, he was a chef de partie in Garmanger. Okay. He has a 2 Michelin-star restaurant in Napoli, in Italy. Mm. Andrea Moscardino was the chef de partie in fish section. He has right now 1 star. He works under Mauro Colagreco in France, in Côte d'Azur.
Okay.
And and then there is other chefs as well. Martino Ruggeri was a sous chef back in the time. Right now, then he became the head chef, and he has a 2 Michelin-star in Paris. Mm. So as you can see, it was a really strong team, all of us.
So a really good teacher. Okay,
that's crazy. Yeah, that's what you want from a mentor. Yeah. It's amazing to be able, I think, especially for him, to know that his, let's say, students are doing really well.
Yeah.
It must be.
So what was your job before you left Yannick Kaleno? Sous chef or?
So while I was there or before?
Just then? Before you left, I don't know.
Before I left, I was running Garmanger, starting. Then I quickly evolved, and I was in Entremet, which was taking all the garnish.
Yeah.
And then I ended up in midsection.
Okay.
And of course, in the last period of the time, you have to run a bit of everything. You become the tournant, no? So you're a bit replacing between Garmanger, Entremet, and midsection.
What is, just maybe for people who don't really know, what is garde à manger, when you say garde à manger?
Garde à manger means you are really in charge of the cold section. It's all the starters. So everything which is canapés, toast, cold dishes, basically.
So you're preparing all these dishes.
Exactly, yeah. With a team, not alone.
Okay,
of course.
Of course.
So you've done 2 years in Paris.
Yeah.
Managed to speak the language.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Mm-hmm. So what did you do after Paris?
Back in the time was Nicolas Letirand, the executive of Pavillon. Mm. And I told him, I told him like I have to go, but not because I was unhappy. Mm. Actually, because you as a chef, you are always looking for a new challenge, something when it's the right time to move. So, so I was like, I have to go. And he used to work for Alain Ducasse, so he put me in contact with Dominique Lory, Les Louis-Quinze in Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
So they gave me the chance to move over there. Went there, of course, not regret anything at all. Was a big experience for me as well. Very tough kitchen.
Yeah.
Alain Ducasse.
I can imagine.
Any stars? Michelin stars? Or
Yeah. Three Michelin stars.
Oh, it's the three Michelin stars. Okay.
And they hire me only as a commis. Even if I was chef de party in Aleno, they told me, like, if you want the job right there, you have to start again from the
from
bottom.
From the bottom.
Wow.
And that, okay. But that's not a problem.
Yeah.
That was not a problem. As for me, actually, it was very good. I'm not going to lie. Because it really, you can understand the very basic of the whole kitchen, how it works. So, yeah, I spent another 2 years and a half over there, actually, with Dominique Glory and 3SR, so you can imagine the level. Busy kitchen, especially through May, which was the Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You're always fully booked. So you were doing 60 covers every dinner. So, yeah, massive kitchen, massive improvement.
Nice. So nearly 5 years in France then?
Yeah,
in total.
Exactly. Yeah, 5 years in France.
And then London.
And then London, very unexpected as well. It was because there were these rumors about Great Britain getting off the Brexit. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. I said, okay, I'm just going to give it a shot because I think London is always being looked not really good in terms of food, I would say. Mm-hmm. At least that was the comments back in that time when I was in France.
Yeah.
They said, if you want to go to London, you have to go when you're really young. Mm. But for me, I was very curious, actually, to come to London.
Okay.
So somehow, same as Paris, booked my flights. I just got in contact with, I was, of course, in a better position. So I arranged a house previously this time. I moved to London in 2019, which was December.
Yeah.
And guess what? 2 months later, COVID hits.
Yeah, COVID. Yeah. So what did you do during the COVID period?
I was very lucky because, because there is a thing which also is very important. In Monte Carlo, before I left, I did San Pellegrino Young Chef, which is a competition who actually showcased best chefs in France. And I was very lucky to be selected in the 10th. And so I went to the final there.
Mm.
And actually, back then, it was how I met Anne-Sophie Pic because she was the judge of the competition.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The beginning of the story.
Exactly. It's 2018, something in between. Yeah. So I can't remember really well. But she was the judge, actually, and she was there. That's how I met Anne-Sophie.
Okay.
And then I ended up winning the Fine Dining Awards for sustainability. So I got a bit of calls around.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? Let me just go and try for London. That's how I moved to London. And in my trials that I did, I met Isaac at a Clove Club.
Chef.
Yeah, okay. Another big, for me, important path in my career, if I can be honest. Because many people are like, you've been working for 3-star, Yannick Aleno, 3-star, Alain Ducasse. Why you want to go back to 1-star in London? But I think it's a nice challenge because I think being 1-star, it's sad to say, but you have to go back and look into food cost because into profitable for business. The Clove Club as well, they were known in the 50 best, in the 50 best guide. So it was a restaurant to look at. And then Isaac has this very different approach to food compared to Gianni Caleno and Alain Ducasse. He was really outside the box, I put it that way.
Okay.
So
more about focus on sustainability or
British, and I didn't know anything. Like sometimes when you've been training with French chef for 5 years, then you come to this restaurant and you don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So I think that was exciting for me. I said, yeah, why not? Just give it a go. So Chef Isaac gave me, I would say, a lot of room for putting my ideas on. And of course, it's a team effort. It's a teamwork.
Yeah.
The head chef was Paul Quinn. So, of course, we work along with him, you know, with Isaac. And guess what? After 2 years, we got the second Michelin star.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Because now we have 2-star Michelin.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, correct. So, also, I saw a bit of transition of the Clove Club.
Yeah.
You know, because I think the restaurant, in the very beginning, they start not really looking for it, you know. But then somehow they were just going through that level. And now they have 2 Michelin star. And Isaac has a brilliant philosophy of British cuisine. He's a Scottish.
The food is amazing. Yeah.
The food is amazing.
It's, wow. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah.
I learned a lot from Isaac.
It was your last experience before joining the Pic family, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Funny fact is I was not in my plans to work for Anne-Sophie Pic. Okay. How it happened is after the Clove Club with Isaac, I kind of had some personal issues in my life. Yeah. And you understand where you really want to go. And it was a few years since I left my country, Peru. So, of course, you feel a bit lost because you've been cooking for French chefs and also for Isaac, which is a British chef. And I wanted to reconnect with my roots. So actually, I book a flight to Peru with no return ticket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I just booked a flight to Peru. I was meant to leave UK. It was 2022, now I remember. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to go and try to do 7 months just traveling Peru.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Reconnect with my roots.
Yeah.
Come back and probably open my own business.
Good. Nice.
Guess what? I lost my passport. I didn't lose it myself. You know, it was DVLA who lost my passport because this is a really funny story. I had my driver license, mm-hmm. which I had to renew. So in the process to renew my driver license, since I'm not British, I have to send my passport to the DVLA for them to send me back the passport with my driver license, right?
Mm, okay.
So I send it, and in the way back, but just Royal Mail, they lost my passport.
It never came.
Like in the mail?
Yeah, and it never came back, yeah. So I had a few issues. I called, I asked for it, I explained my situation. I was like, look, I have to go. I have to leave.
And you need to have a passport, basically.
Exactly. Then I contact my lawyer, and they were like, you can leave, actually, without a problem, because you're Peruvian, but to come back is going to be an issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, I managed to get my passport a few months after.
Okay.
Yeah, such a hassle. Then in the meantime, Chef Anne-Sophie called me back, and she said, Evans, have this big project. You want to come and talk in person? And so I took a flight. I went to Valence.
Without a passport?
No, with a passport.
The passport was back.
So I flew to Valence and had a really nice conversation with Chef Anne-Sophie Pig. And when you have this feeling that you're not really ready for it, to open your own business, I don't know. Chef Anne-Sophie has always been an idol for me since I'm a young chef. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in Valence with her, and then I realized very quickly that there was still much to learn and rediscover.
I feel like you should have applied for the Top Chef of France. Top Chef of France.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing because she actually features in there, so she has the contacts and all that, but you would have done...
She's a judge.
No, she's not a judge, but she's one of the guests she judges on one of the episodes.
So yeah, then that's pretty much how it happened. Then I think for me to work under a big name and understand her universe and her philosophy and the way how she actually thinks about is very deep, and it's been 2 years since I took over that on the peak as a head chef, and actually I'm in this process of keep learning, and her way of thinking always surprised me.
Mm.
Actually, in 2 weeks' time, I'm going back to Valence right now because I have to go often because every time there is a menu development, I have to be with her to work alone. I present my ideas. She always tries me. To her path.
She really is taking on, under her wing, really.
That's amazing.
So you want to open your own business. Is that still in the plans or?
You never know.
Yeah.
Of course, I think the dream of every chef
or
every person is to be independent and have your own thing. I'm very young. Yeah. I consider myself young. I'm 32.
I'm 32, so.
Of course, I think I still have a few years ahead for me to learn.
Mm-mm-mm.
And when the right time comes, it might happen.
Yeah, I feel like you can feel it.
No, 100%. It's better to have a bag of experience and then open it rather than rush it. Mm. Especially as a chef, you have until your 60s, 70s, if you want even, to do your own cuisine and develop what's in your mind and express yourself. That's why I think. And yeah, especially working in those establishments that have been out there and recognized, it must be especially at your level, it must be so very satisfying to be at this level. Being confident and having a team and teaching other young people that also you're going to be a bit like Anne-Sophie Pig or your previous mentors, you're going to be a mentor as well.
I think the team is a really important part of any achievement. You know, without a team, you do anything. And I have to be very honest, like my team is really strong.
Okay.
Really, really strong, especially my three sous chefs, Federico, Andrea and Grigoris. I think they are really the engine, of the whole kitchen, and without them, I wouldn't be able to do what I do right now. And I think, also all of them, they come from amazing backgrounds, very different from each other. And that's the beauty of it. I think it's nice also to, I think that the thing that drives me the most is when you see really happy guests in the end of the night, sometimes when you spend so many hours, in the kitchen and people ask you like, how do you do it? It's really this very end of the service when, you approach the guests, you talk to them and you ask, what is your favorite dish? And they're like, all over the moon. And, of course, because they come there for special celebrations, and that's really what keeps up the energy.
And some come from very far just to try your food.
Yeah.
That's the the best part, yeah. I guess.
So talking about the team, how many people do you have with you in the kitchen?
So we are 13 chefs, including myself. Oh. So actually, it's one of the smallest kitchen I work compared to Jenny Caleno and Ducasse.
Really?
Okay. As a team. But I think we are a good amount of people as well, because I think when it becomes like as well as a big team, then you have no more control of it. Mm. Right now, if you manage to come to see us, the kitchen is not massive.
Yeah.
We have two kitchens. The service kitchen is not massive.
Yeah. Okay.
So actually 13 people seems really crowded as well in a busy service.
Yeah, I can imagine. I went to eat actually at Dame de Pique 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
Yeah, I've got quite a funny one actually, a story. When I went there, so I was with my partner, we were preparing to go to Asia to travel. And it was just, we were departing 1 week after my birthday. My parents decided to, as a present for my birthday, to take me to La Dame de Pique.
Yes.
And so we went there, beautiful, the bar is amazing, the restaurant as well. And back then, I think I was 6 months in of being vegetarian with my partner.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, God, I'm going to La Dame de Pique and I'm vegetarian. This is not going to go down. So I looked at the menu and I couldn't resist. There was the pigeon, so the pigeon. And it took me a good 5 minutes to go, should I cheat? Should I cheat or should I not? And I couldn't resist. It's my favorite meat.
So did you?
Yeah, I cheated. Fair I feel enough. Like it's even stronger than cheating on your partner. I don't know, but it's just like...
You need to worth the money.
It was my birthday and all that. And I was like, I'm going to Southeast Asia. I'm going to be vegetarian for a few years. And so I went for the pigeon, which was really nice. But it was just like, oh God.
So it was the pigeon was around probably that autumn season.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, great. It was really good. And especially the dessert, obviously, the famous millefeuille, the cube, white cube. You still do it?
That one's never going to leave the menu.
Okay.
Okay.
It's one of these desserts that people really come back and ask for it.
Okay.
You have tried, so you tell me how good it is.
I am a big sweet tooth. Yeah. And my dad's a pastry chef, ex-pastry chef. It was really good. I think we all took different dessert, but I think the millefeuille was the favorite.
Is it Sylvain, the ex-head chef, who created this dessert?
Yeah. Sylvain Gouillon. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Unfortunately, he's not with us anymore, but he used to be the executive head chef of La Dame de Pique.
He created this dessert. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That's good.
How it's presented is very just a white cube and
really elegant.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. The whole service as well was great. The hotel is amazing. It must be a great place to work. And maybe next time we'll see the kitchen, how small it is, as you mentioned.
You let me know. Okay, I can definitely take you in a kitchen tour.
Sure.
Yes. Maybe come with the cameras with the kitchen.
Yeah, we can do a podcast in the kitchen. Why not? And now, just to come back a bit at the beginning, why did you choose to become a chef? Like, what's the main thing happened in your life? Like, I want to become a chef.
I think everything started. I'm not going to lie. It's not like it was my dream to become a chef in the very beginning. Mm. I wanted to travel.
Okay.
I was being a very curious guy. I wanted to know what's out there. So I guess I've been okay in school. I haven't been like not too bad, not too good. I always been the average kid. So I wanted to find something that is people need, and you don't actually have to have a massive degree. Like, you know what, I think cooking is what it takes. And then, I come from a family in which my mother, she's an amazing cook. She grew up eating properly, very lucky. So I think that's one of the main reasons. I was like, okay, let's just study. Then I had a friend back in high school, also interested in being a chef. And I think that's how everything started.
Yeah. It's quite funny because I realized something that you said early on. You said that you wanted to go back to Peru, really found your roots and come back. So I'm assuming to open your business. So when you say, I'm coming back, does that mean you want to open your business in London? Have you decided, or is it, I'll come back to Europe?
Until now, sometimes it's a big question mark in my head. I've been traveling a lot, but so far, London, it's one of these places that I feel really comfortable living here. I don't know if I'm going to stay here all my life.
Yeah.
You never know. London, first thing when somebody meets someone in London, you never ask, where are you from?
Yeah.
Like here, no one cares.
Yeah.
Right? Completely. No one cares. So I think, not saying like Italy is less good than London or France either or the States. It's just London has this different vibe that I really like. Mm. So that's why I wanted to come back to London. Then if it's going to happen here or not, to be honest, I don't know.
And so just as a you know, fun anecdote or something you remember from your time in Asofi Pig, because now it's been quite a while you're there. Mm-hmm. Any kind of like fun stories you have with the chef and Sophie Peak, or maybe your team, or maybe with the customers who was vegetarian and eat some pigeon? I don't know. Like, any like fun stories you can have, or anecdotes?
Fun anecdotes. I think there must be some, but the first one that pops to my head, it actually happened a few days ago.
Yeah.
Oh. Because we have a PDR, a private dining room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Which we seat up to 12 people.
Okay. Mm.
And of course, we are always very organized in terms of menu-wise. We ask for dietaries. We want to make sure that regardless the allergy that you have or intolerance, we always want to be on point. And it was a Thursday, it was a Tuesday, and we were prepping, and we opened the restaurant about 6 o'clock, and it was 3 o'clock, so 3 hours to hit the service, and then the guests called, and they were like, there is 3 vegans tonight.
There's what? Three?
3 vegans.
Vegans.
Vegans. And you know what? We serve vegan food as well and under request. Mm. When you are 3 hours, it's really close to starting the service time. So, of course, you get a bit upset and frustrated just because you want to deliver the same quality of food. So, actually, I called my sous chef. And we're like, okay, guys, we have to prep something vegan. And we pull out some dishes from the vegan book because we have one. Mm. And yeah, so we were running and we were on point. Guests left really happy. Actually, they're coming back soon. But it's one of the things that you cannot really
anticipate.
And happen, actually in London, happen very often. People with certain dietaries, we always have to be already have something as a backup.
Yeah.
Unless it's really out of our hands, we're going to be really transparent to the guests that we cannot make. And we're going to offer food anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, give a few dishes out. But yeah.
But for example, in that situation, if someone is asking for like a vegan dish a few days before, do you have a special menu on the side for vegan?
Yeah, big time. We have two menus, which is called Découvert en Voyage, one short version of the full tasting experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, when there is a vegan person, that happened a few times before, and they want to book with us, we ask, do you want to have the full tasting menu or the short version? And depending of what they choose, we make a menu for them.
Mm.
Yeah, we prepare.
Okay. Because you have two menus at the Sophie Peak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we have two menus. We do only tasting menu. It's called a Voyage menu. And then there is a short version of the Voyage menu, which is two dishes less than that.
Okay.
It's just depending because we have a lot of hotel guests as well. Yeah. So sometimes they don't want to stay there for 2 hours in as a dining experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Okay, that's great. That's nice.
How's Sophie Peak as a personality? Because I've only seen her on TV. She seemed really sweet and
she's
calm.
Really cool. Yeah.
She's very calm, but she also has a big personality.
Mm.
If I can describe Chef and Sophie, I would say she's a person that as soon as you start exchanging ideas and knowledge, you can feel like the level that she has. She comes from a She's not the first chef in the family. It's three generations, Jack, Andre, Chef and Sophie. So the knowledge is massive and you can feel very quick intimidated by her. But then it's been 2 years since we were together and always she has this very particular way of exploring and reflecting and always, in French it's called imprégnation, which is like taking always one layer up to certain ingredients. So I think always talking to her, is you're just getting more and more knowledge.
Yeah. She's working with her husband, right?
Yeah, Monsieur David Sinapien. Yeah.
Okay. And he's managing the restaurant?
It's many restaurants around the globe.
Yeah.
It's hard for just one person to just manage all of them.
Makes sense, yeah.
So they work as a team with the whole group Peak,
Okay, that's good.
I've always wondered, like, how the Christmas dinner as a family must be when you have a family that is three chefs, the husband that is also, imagine going to Christmas, like the Christmas table, fight who's going to cook really, and probably, I don't know.
I think they don't want to cook for Christmas. If there's one day they don't want to cook, it's Christmas.
You reckon?
But if you cook all
but I don't know,
do you cook for Christmas?
I've done that in the past, yes, especially when I have my parents around.
Mm.
I think...
You argue with your mum.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But when you have family or friends around, I think it's the best time for us to cook.
Exactly.
I would be lying if I tell you I cook for myself as a three Michelin level in my house. No, of course not.
Yeah.
I'm a very easygoing guy. But we have friends around or family around.
Mm.
Is where you as a chef, you want to also show them some love.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Take pleasure to cook to
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Good wine. good yeah. food.
Exactly. Good hospitality. Good hospitality. Easy. I just have a last question. Well, it's the basic question we always ask to the chef. What kind of advice will you give like to a young chef who just want to start a career? What kind of advice will you give to you?
I think nobody is really sure about being a chef, and there is up and downs in the whole process. There are days in which you're going to feel motivated, and there are days in which you will feel really like you want to change career because of the hours that you do, because of the stress that there is in the kitchen. And I honestly believe that it is not an easy path to follow. But an advice I can give to young chefs is really don't look for money in the very beginning. I know money is important, and don't take me wrong.
Yeah,
and I think it's you know, you have to look after yourself as well, no? But at the very beginning, just be a sponge and just absorb as much as you can. Train with the best, be with the best, you know, cook with the best. It's the only way, once you have gained all of this in your career, then you can actually choose where to go, keep at the Michelin star level, or just simply cook nice food. Mm-hmm. Being a Michelin chef doesn't mean good or bad. Or I think, you know, there are many routes to this industry, and young chefs especially, they really have to, you know, absorb as much as they can while they're still young. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, as you grow, there is more responsibilities. Family comes after as well, and you have less and less time.
Mm. I think it's Gordon Ramsay who was saying, as a young chef, you have to be a sponge to get like the maximum information you can get when you're young to being a big chef.
I mean, it is completely harder to be in any position in hospitality, really. But by the sounds of things, for your route, your journey in hospitality, my journey, and probably yours as well, Arthur. Mm-hmm. But one thing, what's been amazing for me is the traveling. I've traveled to Australia, New Zealand, Southeast Asia. I've worked all over those places. And always through hospitality, and there's always been jobs for me and lessons to be learned as well, and experience to gain. And I think that's one common thing in that job in hospitality, is that you can travel as much as you want, really.
Yeah.
And if you're not scared to lose your passport for a driving license, then
very much, Evans. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was really nice to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have another chef on as well.
Time went really quick, didn't
it? It always does.
We told you, 40 minutes already.
All right.
Yeah, it's too quick. But thank you very much again, for guys, to listen to our episode 6. Yeah. And we're trying to post this week, so Thursday. Not that it really matters.
Maybe we're going to be late, it's going to be Friday.
Well, who knows?
Be Thursday.
If it's sunny, we'll put it up. If it's not, yeah. No, but thank you very much. Follow us on Instagram again, and we are available on all the platforms. And next episode should be the week after. Mm. We've got some really cool head sommelier. And also, we might have an investor who invests in companies such as restaurants and bars in hospitality. So it'll be quite cool to have a view on big investors. What do they look into before they invest? And see you next episode.
Thank you, Evans. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Bye.